You're listening to Discovering Multifamily, where we discuss all educational topics in commercial real estate with an emphasis on multifamily apartment investing via syndication. And now, your hosts, former NFL fullback Brian Leonard and Anthony Scandariato.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Discovering Multifamily podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Scandariato with Red Knight Properties. And today we have a special guest here with us. I'm sure a lot of you have heard of this guest before, Neil Bawa, who is affectionately known by his friends as the mad scientist of multifamily. And he's been speaking all over the country at many different conferences. And he's also the CEO of Grow Capitus and also the founder of Multifamily University, which has over 5,000 students that have attended his webinars to learn how to, you know, passively and actively invest and become financially free via, you know, real estate, whether it's syndications or partnerships. So Neil has a lot of experience, and today we're going to focus on kind of what Neil's outlook is for 2021 on the multifamily side and what he's focused on and how he was able to start and grow his business to where it is today. So thanks for coming on, Neil.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Anthony. Very excited to be on today.
Excellent. So can you talk to us a little bit about your journey? Are you always in real estate? Where did you come from? And, you know, how did you start out? And how are you doing these large, you know, $50 to $100 million transactions now?
So very atypical. So I am a technologist. I tell people I'm a nerd, a geek, and a dork, and all of those are acceptable as compliments. I'm very data-driven. I come from Silicon Valley, where data analytics is basically the root of almost everything that we do. In Silicon Valley, we say Amazon is not an e-commerce company. It's an analytics company. Tesla is an analytics company. These are companies that actually understand the behavior of their consumers through use of big data. And that's my background. I've been involved in real estate on a full-time basis after I sold my technology company in 2013. But I was actually involved in it 10 years before that, because in 2003, that technology company that I was running, 300 employees, I was the senior most executive, we decided to build our own campus. And so I started in real estate in reverse, Anthony. Most people start with a single family rental or maybe, you know, private lending. I started with a 27,000 square foot campus built from scratch. And it was an absolute nightmare for a year. And, you know, it, because you were running a company that was growing 30% a year, and you had to build a $6 million campus basically in the evening in your spare time. And it was a nightmare while I was involved in it. But by the time I finished it, I had fallen in love with real estate. And I went on to build six more campuses for that company in California over the next following 10 years from 2003 to 2013. And also went on to build a single family portfolio in various states on the real estate side. But as time went on, my goal, long-term goal, was always to do large projects. So today in 2020, our company has 18 active projects. We have 500 investors. The portfolio is about $350 million, and we're growing it. COVID, this was a phenomenal year for us. 2020 was a great year for us. And we did seven projects in 1 year, which was actually our highest ever. We'd done six before in 2019, but we managed to actually do seven projects in 2020. And we're in three different businesses. Unlike most syndicators who do one thing, which is value add multifamily, we do value add, but we don't just do multifamily. So we have multifamily, student housing, and self-storage projects on the value add side. We do a lot of new development, and we do industrial new development. We do multifamily, of course, and we also do student housing development. And then we do a third division of our company, which is actually the fastest growing, builds fourplex townhome communities and sells them directly to investors. So these are, like, for example, right now we're building 130 townhomes, which is about 35 fourplexes in New Braunfels in Texas, in that Austin, San Antonio corridor. We're building another 15 fourplexes, about 66 units in Idaho Falls, my favorite city in America to invest in. So that's a third division. So there are three different divisions. So two are development divisions, and the third one is a syndication division. Very exciting times for us, but really all of it comes back to the use of data science and data as a tool to grow your business.
Sure. If you've ever signed up for Neil's mailing list or have seen or participated in any of his deals, you can see he's very, focused on the data, and that's very important, for syndications and for development. So can you talk to us a little bit about, so you started real estate 2013. Did you start out with just the acquisitions of the multi-student housing and self-storage, or did you start out with the development? Did that come later? When did the development come on board?
Sure. So I started investing in 2003. So I was actually a partner in that campus that we built for our company.
Right.
My single family journey started with absolutely phenomenal timing, 2008. So I bought 10 single family homes by using data in a unknown city that nobody knows even today, Madera, California. It was a blockbuster hit. Basically, I was able to realize about 40, 50% annualized returns for 10 straight years on 10 single family homes there. There were some duplexes and triplexes mixed in there as well. So my professional journey as a syndicator, yes, 2013 is when I started. And you're absolutely correct, Anthony. Just like anybody else, you start in the multifamily value add world. And that, my first project in syndication was a multifamily value add. And so was the second, and so was the third. But I'd done development before. Development is much harder than
yes.
value add. I'd say, people say sometimes, you guys in development, you make so much more money, your development fees are so much higher. And the answer is absolutely, they should be higher. But when I look at the amount of work that it takes to develop a multifamily from scratch, and I look at what we get paid, the value add guys actually get paid more. Because it takes a lot less work to manage an existing building that's at 95% occupancy than to take a piece of dirt and go through the zoning and permitting and PUD variances and, 50,000 other things that you need to do to basically build a property and then lease it up. So you're still doing, an accelerated lease up and then either hold it or sell it. So, but a new development, my first six real estate projects were all development projects through a company. Obviously, it's nice to be able to learn in a technology company with lots of money where you're not, afraid for your job. And it's only a side thing that you're doing as part of your technology job. I was chief operations officer, so I was running the whole company. And this was something I was doing on the side. And so it was a phenomenal learning experience without the fear of losing my job, because, I could always go and tell my boss, hey, I'm building these campuses, but I'm not an expert at this, right? And he was very generous, and he was also, my boss was brilliant. He knew a lot, and he mentored me. And still today, he's kind of well ahead of where I am with new construction, and so he taught me lots of things. So it was an odd sort of transition. So first, I started with new construction with very large campuses that were mixed use office type campuses. Then I started doing single family. I did that from 2008 to 2013, and then basically, multifamily from 2013 onward, and 2015, 16, 17, we were getting involved in new construction. And now I'd say probably 2/3 of our business is new construction for one reason only. And, I want to apologize in advance for what I'm about to say, Anthony, but I think you'll see my point. So beat me up if you think I'm saying something that's altogether wrong, but I think you'll see my point. The sort of buildings that we are buying as syndicators today for $110,000 a unit, we were buying these buildings in 2013 for $50,000 a unit. So there's no way in hell that rents have increased that much in 6 years for a $50,000 building to be worth $110,000. So it's only worth that much because of outrageous cap rate compression. And so a lot of people that have made money in the last 6 years don't recognize that 80-90% of what they've made has actually come from cap rate compression, not from, from syndicators completing their business plan. Cap rate compression has really been the big factor. And I just don't think it's possible for cap rates to really compress meaningfully. They can compress a little bit more, but not the way that they have in the last, you know, 7 or 8 years. So value add in a weird sort of way is becoming an oxymoron, because we all keep saying value add, but we don't look at the fact that today we're buying a property that isn't even improved at 5 cap, 4 cap. I've even seen people buy them 3 cap just on the assumption of future, you know, returns on them and future gains and future rent increases. And it just, it doesn't make sense. I am data driven, and the data driven guys are looking at this saying it doesn't make sense. What should we be doing? Well, we should be on the other side of the fence, selling to people that are doing this kind, that have this relentless hunger to buy these assets. So I'm building them, and I'm happy to sell them to whoever wants to buy them. And I'm able to build them and sell them under a sub five cap criteria, and give returns to my investors that are higher. Because as you know, development syndication returns have always been higher than value add, simply because more value is being created, more risk is being taken. And so that's, you know, we think that 2/3 of our business going forward is going to either be in development or in development of townhomes, which is a very, very profitable business if you know how to do it at scale. So, you know, hopefully that answers your question, Anthony, of how I got to that.
No, it makes a lot of sense looking back and, you know, looking at the data. So when you're putting these development deals together, are you leaving any meat on the bone for the syndicator or family office or whoever, you know, your end buyer institution is? Are you selling these as value add deals or more core plus? What's the risk profile you're trying to achieve to maximize, obviously, your IRR and your investors' IRRs?
So with new construction, when we are selling somebody a fourplex that's fully rented out, or when we're building a 240 unit apartment complex in Phoenix and basically renting it out and selling it to people, that buyer is not a value add buyer. That buyer is a core buyer, a core plus buyer. And that's a buyer that, you know, has a $1 billion pension fund that's desperate for return. And they're happy to take something at 5 cap that is going to give them, you know, a 3 or 4% cash yield and go up in a high quality area. So as long as you're building in high quality areas, they'll make lots of money. But you know, the cash flow in the first 5-6 years of the hold is going to be very slow. In the long run, in the 10 or 15 year hold period, they'll make up for it. Those people make a lot of money. I think that one of these prevalent myths that I keep hearing about is that all these pension fund managers that are buying new construction properties in Dallas and New York and California, you know, they're idiots. What, you know, they're paying like 3 cap or 4 cap for all these properties. These guys are morons. And I have to tell you, they're really, really smart. What they're doing is they're basically taking money from pension funds, right? And those pension funds have a 6%, 7% return profile. That includes back-end profits. And so they're in making this investment. In the initial few years, their cash flow is pretty low. But hey, it's a pension fund, right? So they have a much longer time horizon. But 15 years later, when they're selling this property, it's that area quality obviously has gone up. That's the one feature of development, that the quality of the area tends to be better. The area quality has gone up a great deal. Often they end up making more money than we do as syndicators.
No, that's a great point.
The market to go up, and then they exit, so they make a lot of money.
Right. No, that's a great point too. It's all about, you know, your business plan and like you said, what's the goal at the end of the day? What's your holding period? So let's talk about your holding periods. I know, I think before we got on the show, you mentioned you're looking at some opportunity zones. So those are more longer term investments. On your development opportunities, it sounds like you're getting in there, you know, getting the entitlements on whatever asset class it may be, you know, obviously improving the asset through, you know, constructing it. And then are you're flipping them right away? Or are you making sure it's some liquidity events taking place through a refinance and returning some equity and then, you know, selling it a couple years later? Kind of what's your time horizon?
The above, right? So my Mill Race project, which is in Provo, Utah, which is my second favorite market in the U.S. to invest in, is an opportunity zone project. So that one's a 10-year horizon with a refinance somewhere in the fourth year range. Coyote Creek, which is a property that I've finished building and it's in active lease up at this point, is in St. George, Utah. Also a 10-year horizon with a refinance next year. If we're doing the 10-year horizon, because some of our investors like the long-term investment, they don't want to keep going from syndication to syndication and have to, you know, deal with the taxation. So we offer 10-year new construction projects. We offer 10-year with opportunity zone projects where people are coming in and you know, both deferring and getting tax-free investments. Then we do 4-year type projects like the 240 unit. That's a $55 million project that we're building. It's now in active construction in Phoenix. That one's a 4-year time horizon, so there probably is not going to be a refinance there. And then there are short-term projects. So our RTP Nova project, those are townhomes that are now built. Investors basically are investing for a 2-year time frame in those projects. As you can imagine, none of them have any cash flow whatsoever in the first 2 years, right? So beyond the first 2 years, obviously the property is built and it's leased up, so there's cash flow. It's a different feel. It's a different kind of investor. You know, these are doctors, technologists. We have very high net worth investors who are interested in the highest potential return, highest value creation. They're not necessarily looking for this to be a way for to kind of run their households. So the answer is all of the above. When we sell townhomes, that's not a syndication. I mean, people just come into us and we buy them, basically sell them townhomes. They're brand new townhomes. They've already got tenants in them. And that's a 30-year hold. That buyer, Anthony, we tell them this is how you create wealth. I can tell you syndications don't create wealth. Most of my money that I've made is through syndication. Most of my projects are syndication. Syndication is good for equity creation. True wealth is created through holding an asset for a 20, 30-year time frame, where by year 7, you've refinanced it, you've zeroed out your equity, and now you're just holding it. Each year, you're getting your depreciation on it, straight line depreciation. So for 27 and a half years, you're depreciating that asset. And even after that, you don't sell it. You might, you know, refinance it again in year 15, then refinance it again in year 25. The amount of equity that you can create on a single fourplex that way, $4 to $5 million. In 30 years, $4 to $5 million, right? So that's the wealth creation side of our business. There's lots of people who prefer syndication, they like short term. I'm happy to offer those products, but I'm also very candid. True wealth is built by holding an asset for 20 to 30 years. So between 2 years and 30 years, all of those are products offered through us.
Got it. So you have a wide variety of different asset classes and product types and investment vehicles for your partners to come alongside you in the journey, which I think is excellent.
By the way, not just time horizons though, right? We offer different asset classes. So you can invest in industrial, mm-hmm. storage, student housing, multifamily, townhomes, right? Whatever you think is the right product. We hold an event in January each year called Real Estate Trends. We have over 10,000 attendees on this particular event through a series of presentations that we do. And we tell them what we think is the hardest product. Last year, it wasn't even what we did. Last year, it was industrial. And we only did one small industrial deal. It got sold out in a day. But that didn't change the fact that we felt that industrial was the hardest product. And what was interesting was we said that in Jan 2020. And then COVID happened. And as you can imagine, industrial was on fire because we had, you know, 5 years of e-commerce growth in 5 months, right? So, you know, at this point, industrial is the most bullish asset class in America. And so we provide that information, and sometimes it's stuff that we're not doing. But because we are known for our analytics, we tell people this is what we think is the best asset class in America right now.
Right. That's excellent. So Neil, are these set up at least moving forward mostly in fund scenarios? But are you doing them on a deal by deal?
We do
basis?
A deal by deal basis. I mean, what we found is that our projects. So one of the things that we do is, you know, it makes sense to do a fund if you're like, let's say you're only investing in Houston or in Dallas or in one of these places, or you're maybe only investing in the Southeast, and all of these are multifamilies. It makes sense to do a fund. But imagine that, you know, like imagine five deals coming from my company. One's a townhome in Idaho Falls. You've never even heard of Idaho Falls. The next one is a $55 million new construction project. The next one is a value add in, you know, Greenville, South Carolina. And then the next one is an industrial new build. I mean, and then there's a self-storage, you know, value add with some new construction components. That's what five of my five deals look like. How do you take that and stick it into a fund? Right.
You'd
have like 27 different objectives of the fund. You really can't do it. So we do a deal by deal, even though it's kind of painful for us, but obviously it's more advantageous for our investors.
Excellent. Excellent. And then when you present these deals, your private placements, it's typically through 506Cs, 506Bs. How is that structured?
We can't do 506B anymore. So we do not work with non-accredited investors. We work with accredited investors. And when they're investing in syndications, it's $100,000 minimum. When they're investing in fourplexes, it's $250,000 minimum. So if they want direct investment, that model is a $250,000 to $500,000 model. If they're doing syndication fractional investment, that's $100,000 model. But either way, it's only really for accredited investors. And I've said it before, a lot of people in the syndication world disagree with me. I think the data proves me right. 506B is a silly thing for syndicators to do. Once you've done your first two syndications, if you're staying with B, you're just, you've got a confidence problem. You will always raise more money if you do a C. It's a transition when you move from B to C. It's a transition. It's a painful transition. But you become a vastly better company if you just say, you know what, I'm just not going to touch 506B. I don't want to deal with those compliance issues, Anthony. So, you know, 506C followed by C followed by C. That's what we do.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense, Neil. As we kind of wind down, I'd love to hear your outlook. Obviously, the show's Discovering Multifamily, so we're focused mostly on multifamily. I know you mentioned a few cities that you're investing in. I guess, you know, where do you see the growth in the United States happening 2021, 2022? And, you know, what type of multifamily is it, you know, the workforce housing holding up? Is it more of the affordable housing? What's kind of your outlook moving forward for the next couple of years?
Well, I can tell you that, I mean, it's fairly similar to what it was at the beginning of 2020. We've seen that, you know, Southeast markets are continuing to pull people away. COVID's accelerating that. I think the worst market to invest in today that's an expensive market is California, followed by New York. You know, and when I say that, obviously, there's markets like Louisiana, which are really terrible to invest in. But in general, when we look at these super expensive markets, they've had their day and they're coming to the end of it. The sort of markets that are benefiting are like New Jersey, for example. Newark in New Jersey is becoming an ultra hot market as people flee from New York. I don't think that's going to change. Once those people realize just how much they get for their buck and they adjust to the telecommute process, I think that half of those are never going to go back to New York City. So we see Southeast markets accelerating. Phoenix is accelerating. All four of the primary markets in Texas are accelerating. Even though Dallas for the moment is very expensive for syndication, we think that it's an overpriced market. We think that the market will adjust. But if you're holding for 10 years, it's still probably one of the top markets in the US. Some of the smaller markets that are doing well are very interesting. Greenville, South Carolina is really doing well. Raleigh, Durham, Charlotte, these are phenomenal markets. And we think that it's going to spread to the very small markets in North Carolina, like Asheville, Winston-Salem. I think those markets are going to do well in the future. The superstar, which nobody knows about, is the state of Idaho. The fastest growing state in the U.S. is Idaho. Fastest growing state for inward migration, according to U-Haul or any other trucking company, is Idaho. And so basically the market to invest in was Boise for the last 2 years. Now it's overpriced. It is the most overpriced market in the U.S. So we think that the best market in the U.S. is unquestionably Idaho Falls. it's the only market at this point in the United States with job growth through COVID. So if you haven't looked at Idaho Falls, check it out. But there's other markets that we like. We like a corridor as well. We've often find that markets are not as strong as corridors. The best corridor in America is the 72-mile corridor that leads from San Antonio to Austin. There are four cities inside that corridor. Nobody knows about these cities as well, but there's Kyle, Buda, Selma, New Braunfels. Actually, there's five cities. There's San Marcos as well. Those five cities are benefiting from the all ships rising effect that is Austin. The problem is you can't do syndication in Austin because everything's too expensive. But these cities, you know, like, for example, New Braunfels is about 37, 38 miles away from Austin. So there's a lot of people, there's an all ships rising effect there. You know, San Antonio is benefiting from the Austin effect as well. So we think that it's really that corridor in that's stronger than any individual city. Though if I had to pick one city out of five, I'd probably pick New Braunfels.
That's awesome. I'll have to, our audience, for those of you who are listening, they're definitely going to do research on every single city that you just mentioned, Neil. Before we wind down the show here, how do you, obviously you own properties in, you know, various different states, and I think you mentioned you're in California, correct?
I live in California. I don't invest there.
Exactly. So how are you able to invest all over the country? Do you have a property management arm, or do you third party that? How do you manage that? On the ground
process. We have the most unique property management system in America. So I found out that having a property management arm is not efficient because you don't get the leverage that a local property manager has with all of their contacts, their connections. But then at the same time, local property managers only give you as much attention as they're capable of. So a number of years ago, I created a team in the Philippines. I call it the Efficiency Center. So it is a fairly large team now. It's grown to be fairly large. And this team basically is bolted on top of a property manager in a particular market. And it optimizes what property managers are doing. They do things like they generate tens of thousands of tenant leads. They process those tenant leads for the property manager. They make delinquency calls. They make reputation management calls. They do a lot of things. They basically think of it as a property manager and a half, where we control the half, and that half gives us incredible insights into what the property manager is doing wrong or doing right, but we use third-party property manager. So we believe that we have found the Rosetta Stone when it comes to property management, and it is not having your own property management arm.
Got it. Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions and arguments you can make to both, but this is a pretty compelling argument, Neil. As we wind down, how could people find you, learn more about your company, and reach out to you?
Well, that's really easy. I happen to be the only Neil Bawa on the World Wide Web. So if you type in my name, which is N-E-A-L, last name Bawa, B-A-W-A, hit enter. You will see about 100 podcasts. You can also go to multifamilyu.com. We have about 35,000 people a year that attend data-driven webinars on various topics at multifamilyu.com. That's multifamily followed by the letter u.com. If you'd like to know about specific areas that we are experts in, you can search for Neil Bawa space virtual assistants, and you'll see podcasts about our 20-person virtual assistant team. We have 10 employees in the U.S., but we have 20 in the Philippines, and we believe that that's an X factor that most people don't know about. If you're interested in knowing about, you know, how we do property management with that team in the Philippines, you can Google Neil Bawa Lasal, L-A-S-A-L, which is a property management optimization system that I invented. If you're interested in learning about best cities to invest in the U.S., type in my name, followed by best cities in the U.S., and you'll see lots and lots of information on that. The best thing to do is to come to our website in Jan or Feb each year. That's when we release the new list of cities for syndication. We release a new list of city for development projects. They're not always the same. So that's coming up in the next 15 days or so. So start with just Googling my name and go from there.
Excellent. NeilBawa.com and Grotus Capital. So we really appreciate you coming on. We'll have a link to Neil's website, as well as all his social media platforms, in the iTunes description. And if you liked what you heard today, please give us a rating and review on iTunes, as it helps Neil and I get our message out to a greater audience. Thank you again, Neil, for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Anthony. Have a good day.